Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the DIGA podcast. I'm your host for today's episode, Austin Black. Today we are joined by Dr. Jay Vary, an associate professor of dermatology at the University of Washington. With Dr. Vary today, we learn about some of the exciting changes that have happened to the Department of Dermatology at the University of Washington and get an overview of what makes their residency program unique. Dr. Vary also shares with us some of his advice and tips on what makes a good applicant, as well as shares with us a little bit about the dermatology urgent care clinic that they operate at the University of Washington. So with that said, we'll see you on the skin side. All right, everyone, welcome back to the DIGA podcast. Today we are joined by Dr. Jay Vary from the University of Washington Department of Dermatology. Dr. Vary, we're grateful to have you here with us. Would you mind introducing yourself just a little bit?
Yeah, thanks very much. Yes, I'm Jay Vary. I've been working at the University of Washington since I finished residency in 2009. I'm on faculty. I do just general medical dermatology. I don't have a particular specialty. And then I'm also involved in some of the administrative aspects of the clinic and trying to open new clinics and expand and just try to operationally make it work a little bit better. I'm also involved in teaching the derm residents as well as medicine residents and medical students too in clinic.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you here, and we have some interesting things to talk about that's kind of on the up and coming at UW and some changes to the program there. So kind of let's learn about you here a little bit to start. Going into medical school, a budding Dr. Vary, was dermatology something you had an initial interest in? Was it something you found late in your medical school career? Kind of walk us through how you found dermatology.
Yeah, that's a good question. When I first started medical school, dermatology was not anything at all related to what I wanted to do. I thought I was going to be doing primarily research. I was thinking of doing some sort of internal medicine specialty probably. And in our second year of med school, we had 2 weeks of dermatology. There was a lot that way back then. So we had every afternoon for 2 weeks straight devoted to derm. And one of the things we used to do at the UW, which we haven't been able to do since the pandemic started, is we would have a patient session on Saturday during our class where we would bring in about a dozen people with some uncommon skin condition usually. And all the first and second year medical students would go around and see them in the derm clinic and practice describing what they saw and such. But you know, most of the people invited to this usually had some genetic condition or something that was quite obvious and very dramatic. And I remembered enjoying the derm class, but I was really struck when we did this. There was a woman who came through with lamellar ichthyosis, which was just a dramatic thing to see on someone's skin. And she was probably about 65 years old. And it was amazing to think that she had had this her whole life. And it's the first thing that anyone notices when they see her, when they're introduced to her. And what just a profound impact that would have on her for her ever since the time she was an infant. So I thought that was emotionally really interesting. And just psychologically or intellectually, I really enjoyed the other aspects of dermatology because I was interested in doing research. So something I thought about, and then I was in the MD-PhD program, so I went off for a while and did a PhD on something completely unrelated. But I wanted to continue doing research. And one of the nice things about derm is that getting skin samples is very easy. It's often left over after a lot of surgical procedures. So it's, and if you want to do research on something actually in dermatology, doing a biopsy is a fairly non-invasive test for getting samples. So that's how I initially got interested in derm. So as I came back, I did a derm rotation and found I really enjoyed it a lot. So I decided to apply, and thankfully it worked out well.
Yeah, that's neat that you're able to kind of have that exposure to the patients. I know, like having done I think we had a week and a half of derm lectures in my second year of medical school, but definitely no direct patient exposure to some of these more unique conditions or conditions that, you know, from the layperson, they might not know falls within the realm of dermatology. So that's cool that you guys were able to have that exposure, and obviously it was impactful on you and something that kind of carried with you throughout the rest of your training. So you went to school at UW, University of Washington, for med school, and then you stayed on for residency there. Is that correct?
I did, yeah. So I stayed on for residency, and then after finishing, I did a postdoc for about 2 years in a research lab before realizing I hated writing grants, and I really enjoyed seeing patients and teaching a lot more. So I've been almost strictly clinical since that time.
Okay. So since you did your residency at University of Washington and kind of where the program is today, what are some of the biggest changes that have happened in that time span to the program?
When I started, it was around the time there was a transition in our program, as well as a lot of others, sort of getting away from people doing a lot of research. So that was a main focus, where every resident took a couple years to do research. And I was around the cusp where that was starting to change a little bit, even though I did end up following that track for a while. So we've transitioned into a lot more of a clinically based residency since that time. Very, very few people continue to go on to do like basic science research at our institution. We have some people doing research in the department, but most of our residents typically aren't all that involved with it. Not by design, it's just sort of the way that it's drifted over time. Our program in general focuses very heavily on medical dermatology. We have a lot of former medicine trained residents and attending that decided to do dermatology later. And because of that, we have a big focus on medical dermatology. We still have quite a bit of training in surgical derm, a lot of training in dermatopathology. And so DermPath has been very strong in our program for a long time. So our residents get really good training in DermPath. And we sort of don't spend as much time on cosmetics because of that. So our focus is mostly on medical dermatology and less on cosmetics. So our residents get exposed to that. They get what they need to go out and practice, but it's not a big focus of their training here.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any in-house fellowships? I know you mentioned like the strong derm path, those fellowship options as well.
Yeah, so we've got an in-house DermPath fellowship that's very active. We get a fellow every year. And then we're affiliated with the Seattle Children's Hospital, which is a tertiary care facility within Seattle that serves all of the Northwest. So we have a good peds derm group there, and they have a peds derm fellowship as well. Currently, we don't have a surgical fellowship. And then I believe we also have a more complicated medical derm fellowship, that's sort of one of those unofficial ones. That's not part of the match.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of the outside of the match options. That's cool that you have the opportunity for, I guess, further education beyond residency for people who like the program at UW or the patient population that's in the surrounding area. I know that a lot of applicants like the opportunity to continue on and do that.
Yeah, we have quite a few of our residents do go on to do both DermPath as well as Mohs. I think we have a disproportionate number of people that go in into DermPath afterwards, because that's always been a focus of what the program works on too.
Yeah, I'm sure always having a good teacher or strong exposure just kind of furthers interest in the field, and that just translates to people continuing into the field of DermPath or whatever it is that they get good exposure to. So being in the Seattle area, the kind of that Washington Pacific Northwest, do you all have patients traveling in from, say, Alaska, or maybe any of like the more southern portions of Canada that maybe have some unique conditions that aren't able to be treated by, you know, local family practice docs or dermatologists in the area, and they need something kind of in a more academic setting?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Western Washington is really where almost all the dermatologists in the state are located. There's a few sprinkled around central and eastern Washington, but most of it's concentrated on the western side, where there is a bigger population. But that means we do have a lot of people coming in from different more rural areas of the state. Washington is also the only medical school for University of Washington, the only medical school for Alaska, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming as well. So the medical school serves all those. Our derm residency doesn't necessarily go out and do work in those different states, but we still are a primary referral center for a lot of Idaho and Western Montana and most, if not all, of Alaska. So we very rarely get patients coming from Canada because it's a different healthcare system. But we get a lot of patients coming down from Alaska, so there's just not very many dermatologists up there. And those that are there, you know, typically hours away from where someone's going to live anyway. So they'll come down. We also are affiliated with Harborview, which is the county hospital. That's the level one trauma facility. So since they have a burn unit there, all the cases of toxic epidermal necrolysis or TEN get airlifted over to Seattle from that entire area. So we get to see a lot of those probably disproportionately for the just for the state that we live in.
Yeah, that makes sense. Kind of, and now that you mentioned that, you know, even if you are in Alaska and there's a dermatologist within the state, it might almost be more feasible for you to get to Seattle than it is to get to wherever in Alaska that dermatologist might be.
Yeah.
So definitely a need for dermatologists in that part of the country. Is telehealth, telederm something that's big in your area just due to the nature of there not being as many dermatologists in some of those areas?
Historically, it actually surprisingly has not been. So we've experimented with a few different teledermatology projects prior to the pandemic that were sort of on a modest scale were successful, but nothing that's ever been very organized that spans the area. The exception of that is in the VA system. Our former chief at the VA set up a really robust teledermatology program that serves all of Washington, a little bit of Southern Oregon, skips Northern Oregon because OHSU is there, but Southern Oregon and all the way as far south as Arizona. So that's really well developed within the VA system, but not within the non-VA part of our department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then, of course, since the pandemic, we all do some telemedicine visits as part of our normal routine, but all those people are initially seen at the university. We don't do telehealth initially. We always want to see them in person before we start doing follow-ups by telehealth. So I find it's just really hard on Zoom or any other sort of medium to really get a good idea if you can't see and touch the person in person.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that perspective from a lot of kind of attending level dermatologists that the, you know, the virtual aspect of the visits are nice for something like a wound check post, you know, excision or a follow-up post, like a treatment, things like that. But as far as like the initial diagnosis or the initial skin check, so to speak, kind of the in-person, the tangible aspect of it is really hard to find via like a telehealth communications platform.
Yeah, I agree. I think photographs can be somewhat helpful if they're in focus and in good lighting, which is always a challenge.
Right.
But when you see patients on a medium like Zoom or something, though, the quality of the video looks great until you're actually trying to see something on someone's skin. And in order to improve bandwidth, that quality is really degraded intentionally, and you just can't see anything.
Yeah, very, very valid. And you bring up a good point, too, with the photographs. Photographs can be great, but there's a lot of criteria that goes into having a good picture. And oftentimes our patients, you know, whether it's on the back and it's hard to reach place as is, or they aren't as familiar with the technology, it's hard to get those pictures, and it can be frustrating for the provider as well as for the patient. So definitely kind of that in-person aspect of it is hard to replace, but I think that there is some good utility to those telehealth options. So one of the other unique aspects and kind of one of the things that drew me to talking with you is what you guys have at UW called the Duck Clinic. Could you tell us a little bit kind of what Duck stands for and what the Duck Clinic is and kind of how it functions?
Yeah, happy to. So the Duck is our acronym for the Derm Urgent Care Clinic, the DUCC. It just has a conveniently pronounced acronym. We started this up, I think, around 4 to 5 years ago, and we started this as a to kind of achieve a few dual roles. Our residents are often see a lot of very complicated patients, but the volume that they see in any particular day often is not very huge. And usually the limiting factor in our clinics is the attending. So when we have a lot of trainees in our clinic, they're often waiting for us rather than the other way around. And so because of that, there's often downtime from the time our residents or other trainees see a patient and the time that they're actually staffing them. So they don't get a lot of practice in really high volume turnover of clinics, which is the norm in dermatology. Whether you're in academics or private practice, you're really turning over patients quickly. So we wanted to have a way that they could see a higher volume of patients in a really quick manner. And one of the challenges we have at the university, which is true at a lot of academic centers, is that the volume of referrals that we get is just far in excess of how many spaces we actually have to see patients. So that creates long wait times. And our concern always is that there's a patient out there referred for what turns out to be a melanoma, and it takes them a few months to come in and see us. And we don't want that to happen. So we wanted a way to assess people more quickly when they had an urgent concern for something that might be cancer. So what, and then the third aspect that we realized was that on Friday afternoons, no one ever wants to be in clinic. So most of the attendings don't have clinics on Friday afternoons. And although we're open, it tends to be a place where we have a lot of extra space and a lot of staff that are being paid to be there, but just not much is going on. So we set up this urgent care clinic on Friday afternoons that's entirely resident run. And the ground rules of it are that we see patients who are coming in for a lesion that they're worried about, and we tell them there can only be one spot. We can talk more about that in a second, but they come in for one lesion, so typically a skin cancer concern. And then we batch schedule them, so we'll have a whole bunch of people scheduled at 1 o'clock and a whole bunch more scheduled at 2 o'clock rather than individual appointments. So then our residents just pick up the charts as the patients come in as quickly as possible, assess them, and then come out to present to the attendings. It's only dermatology residents. We don't have any other trainees there, so there's no medicine residents and no medical students. So it runs really, really efficiently because all the derm residents can go in and do biopsies on their own. They're basically just staffing to decide if they should something that needs to be biopsied or not. So as an attending, what we try to do is basically just act as the person who's blessing the procedure and make sure that we agree with that plan and try and let the residents run everything else as much as they can, like it's their own clinic. And that's allowed us to really assess many patients much, much sooner than they ever would have before for that lesion that they're worried about. And when I've surveyed the residents, they tend to find that it does allow them to learn how to be more efficient, or at least practice being more efficient, and gives them a level of independence that we try to give them in other clinics, but it's often harder with more complicated patients for them to really operate independently. We have to staff them for billing reasons, so we do have to go in and see everyone, but for the most part, we try to make sure that we're keeping the, whatever their plan was intact and try not to interfere.
Yeah, that's I really, kind of when I first heard about the Duck Clinic, it's a unique idea, but in the same sense, it's something that, like you mentioned, we don't want someone to be waiting with a melanoma that, you know, is progressively morphing and becoming more difficult to treat or metastasizing, wait for weeks or months at a time. And then at the same notion, it's also very beneficial for the residents to get kind of a more high-paced experience, which is a bit more realistic of what they might see once they leave to go practice. You mentioned like doing biopsies of the lesions. Is that kind of like the most procedural that these duck clinics get, is kind of a biopsy? Or are there other aspects if someone comes in with something that you might, you know, consider to do an excision at the time? Or is that something you would schedule for a visit later down the road?
Yeah, there's some variability in that. It really just depends on how busy the clinic is and whether or not the resident thinks that they have the time to go off and do an excision, and whether or not the attending feels like they're going to be available to supervise if needed, if there's a complication. So most of the times we just do biopsies. When we initially set the clinic up, one thing that we thought we were going to be doing was addressing urgent follow-ups from like an emergency room. So, you know, our ER has a lot of people coming in for skin complaints. And if we don't have someone in-house at the time to assess those, they want them seen quickly and follow up. And that's sometimes hard to arrange. So we thought we would see people for urgent rashes or urgent emergency room follow-ups. And sort of the same problem we run into there is what happens with an excision, and that it takes a lot of time to do that. Those are never quick appointments, even though we all might think they were going to be. And if the attending gets stuck in a procedure or stuck in a room for a while, the whole clinic stops. So we've found we really have to have very limited, much more lesions of concern clinics to keep it running as efficiently as what we were hoping. And that does unfortunately mean we're turning people away who also have urgent concerns, just not the sort that we can address in that clinic. When I presented this at the American Professors of Dermatology, the APD meeting a few weeks ago, I did talk to someone who's at another institution whose run a clinic similar to this for a while. So it wasn't a totally unique idea like we thought it was, which maybe isn't that surprising in retrospect. But they had found a way to actually assess people with rashes in there, but they also had to set really strict criteria around it because they're worried about the same thing we were, that we occasionally have a patient who sent in for a lesion of concern that turns out to be a 10 centimeter ulcer of pyoderma gangrenosum on their leg. So, you know, they weren't as billed, and that happens. We haven't found great ways to completely prevent it, but at least we try to stack the deck a little bit in our favor. So if we get one of those a week, we can deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So are these mostly referrals, like you mentioned, kind of you had anticipated, like people who go to the ER, the ED, and then they need to be seen urgently? Are they mostly referrals from that end of it? Are they from PCPs in the community? Is it self-referrals from the patients who maybe have had established care with a dermatologist in the clinic and they just have a lesion of concern, maybe with a history of melanoma? How are these patients coming to you in the duck clinic?
Yeah, it's really all of the above. So we get some self-referrals, referrals that are sent in by the PCP. And then many of them are our own patients who just develop something in the meantime and send a MyChart message in with a photograph of something. And we said, well, we're not really sure, or it looks worrisome and we want to see in person. So not all these people are ending up with biopsies. There's a lot of people that are coming in with a seborrheic keratosis, and we tell them you're fine and send them on their way. But they do come from all over. We have a protocol set up that when we do get new referrals in, they basically screen them to look for anything that might be a lesion of concern that might fit this. And we try to get them in to see the duck clinic first before scheduling them out for a regular visit.
And then you mentioned if they have a lesion of concern, and you alluded to this earlier, it's limited to one lesion. How is that, like you mentioned, kind of screened prior to the patient getting there? How is that reinforced with the patient? Because I'm sure that is something that you run into every time the duck clinic is operating, that patients are, oh, I have this and I have this. And how are those concerns addressed in the moment?
Yeah. Aspirationally, people come in for one thing, but I think we all know in practice that that's not what people come in for quite often. They are hoping other things can be addressed. So at the time they're scheduled, to the time they check in, to the time that they're roomed, at each point they're reminded that it's really just a single lesion clinic. And, you know, people still come in and they're just shocked that they can only talk about one thing. But so we try to remind them that we did talk about all that. And sometimes they never heard it or it wasn't transmitted. We're never quite sure exactly what happened, but we do our best to try to just limit it. You know, in practice, it's very common. We end up looking at a couple things, but we really try to make it just a lesion clinic. We're not going to do a full skin exam, and we don't want to talk about their nail fungus. So we really just try to keep it as focused as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We're human. They're human. You know, it's never perfect.
Yeah. Right. In theory, it's great, but there's always, you know, bumps along the road that we have to overcome.
Yeah.
So say a patient comes in with a lesion that's concerning for melanoma, a biopsy is performed. Is there spots in your normal schedule, you know, the week following, that are kind of reserved for, you know, lesions of concern from the duck clinic? Like, we need to get these people in to see them. We saw them in the duck clinic. Are there spots kind of in place for that already? Do we work them into the schedule? How does that work if you see someone in the duck clinic?
It's pretty uncommon that anybody we see there actually needs to be seen super urgently afterward, except for maybe a surgery. So we're going to biopsy it when they're there. In the uncommon situation where they've got a possible melanoma that's too big to do a biopsy on and really needs an excision, we can fit them into derm surgery typically within the week. And that doesn't happen often enough that it's a challenge. But when people come in and they might have a melanoma, they can wait to get that full skin exam for a couple months. So we just put them in the queue and just make sure we address the problem that we know about before we start looking for more things.
Yeah.
So most of the time, it actually works pretty smoothly to get them back in the regular queue.
Okay. You mentioned the feedback more or less from the residents has been positive. How have patients seemed to like kind of this intermediate clinic between the actual, you know, full-on appointment and then having nothing essentially as the alternative?
It's variable. I think most people realize that there's a long wait to dermatology. So if they can get in a week or two to get something looked at, they're often very appreciative. Even if people leave finding out it's only an SK. I find in my regular clinic, when someone comes in with a concern and I find it's only an SK, then they want to talk about their nail fungus or something else. You can tell that's my pet peeve. They want to talk about many other things. But in the duck clinic, most people understand they really just came in for that one thing, and they're quite relieved and feel good about it. It's pretty uncommon that someone is upset that we couldn't address everything, and they can understand that there are some limitations in what we can address there, and we are going to get them back in. So overall, it tends to be very positive.
Yeah.
And we feel a lot more comfortable. We can sleep at night that there's not people on our wait list who are sitting there with a bleeding basal cell that's 2 inches across or something. And although, you know, our concern is that someone might have a melanoma that's going to progress during that wait time. But, you know, if you're a person with something you think is skin cancer, you don't want to wait for 3 months either. That's incredibly anxiety provoking. So we're hoping that intangibly we're helping that aspect of it as well.
Yeah, help the patient's anxiety, and at the same time, your own anxiety maybe about humanity and what you might be missing due to these wait times that are unfortunately a little bit out of our control.
Yeah.
So the duck clinic is obviously unique, and we mentioned some of the other aspects of the program at UW that you feel like are strong. I know that UW Dermatology recently underwent a change from being a part of a department or being its own department. Can you kind of explain to me what that change was? I know it was rather exciting.
Oh, yeah. So we used to be a division of dermatology within the larger Department of Medicine. And I think that's how many academic areas were structured back decades ago. Most academic dermatology areas have branched off to become their own department over the last couple of decades, though, and we were one of the few that were still remaining as a division. So when I first started residency in 2006, we had our first strategic retreat where we talked about whether or not we should be a department. And that's how long it takes from the time you conceive of an idea before it actually becomes realized. Sometimes it's a long process involving all sorts of technical issues that no one could have ever imagined ahead of time. But as our own department now, we are hoping that we have a lot more control over our finances, over our hiring and such. And we are trying to grow significantly over the next 9 years now that we're on our own department and we can control our hiring process a little bit better. So as I mentioned, our wait times are just incredibly excessive because we can't meet the volume of what's out there just within our own institution. So we're trying to expand tremendously clinically and hire a lot more clinical dermatologists so that we can hopefully meet that demand within a few years. And yeah, we would not have been able to do that had we not become a department. You really need that independence to make that work.
Yeah, that's exciting. It sounds like it's been a long time coming, and seems like that can be the case when it comes to working through some of the hierarchical processes of academic medicine or medicine in general. With a lot of our listeners being medical students or maybe people early in their training, does this expansion that you're looking for include a possible expansion into the number of residents that you guys take each year? I know that can sometimes be a little bit out of the control of the department as well. It comes from the funding of the government as well. But is that something you all are hoping is on the future?
Yeah, absolutely. As we hire more dermatologists, we have a lot more room for residents than in our clinics as well. So we're hoping to increase by about 50% in the total number of residents that we have within a few years too. So yeah, I think everyone's excited about that. And, you know, since we're the only residency training program for Washington and Idaho and Montana and Alaska, it's kind of inconceivable. We're only producing about 4 dermatologists per year from that. So we really have to produce enough, at least for our region, in order to serve it really well. So we're hoping to expand a lot.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's exciting for you all and for our listeners here as well to know that there might be a little bit more room at the University of Washington for some of us looking for training opportunities in the future. You did make mention earlier as well that you're kind of one of your interests or duties, if you will, within the department is expansion of some of the clinics. Do you all have satellite clinics kind of away from the major hubs in Washington, kind of in the rural areas, or maybe more of the suburbs that you all treat patients out as well?
Not too much in the suburbs or rurally at all. So we do have a couple of sites where we currently work. So within the University of Washington, we serve a few different hospitals. We serve Children's Hospital, the main University of Washington hospital, which has two campuses that are only a couple of miles apart from each other. So they're not geographically all that far apart. And then Harborview, which is our big county hospital. And then we're affiliated with the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, which doesn't have an inpatient service, but has a really active outpatient transplant service. And then we have a Seattle Veterans Affairs or VA hospital too. So we do work in all those different institutions, but we, as far as outpatient satellite clinics, they're all located very close to the Seattle area. We have not branched much out into the surrounding area, which is something we do hope to do as we need to expand more too.
Yeah. Again, that takes more people, which is something that sounds like is in the pipeline.
Yeah.
But you do have a good variety of sites, as is it sounds. You get the exposure to the pediatrics, to the VA population, to the county population, as well as what I would imagine is more of the private population at some of these other hospitals. So you kind of have a good mixture of the patients with whom you're interacting as is, and looking to further expand on that.
Yeah, I think it's really nice for people who train here in residency, because you do have a really diverse patient population, both ethnically and racially diverse, as well as economically diverse. And each hospital has its own unique sort of demographics. And we have a children's hospital as well as, you know, the VA, where it's all adults. So really, really different areas to train in, and you have to go through all of them. So you get to experience each of them.
Yeah, that is unique. You also made mention of some of the teaching that you do for the medicine residents, the internal medicine residents. Kind of what does that look like? I know that that's more in the medicine program itself, but how much exposure do the internal medicine residents get to dermatology? And what does that interaction look like between you all and them?
Yeah, so we have our internal medicine program at the university is quite large. There's just hundreds and hundreds of medicine residents. So there's a few different derm rotations that they can do at the different sites. So some of them rotate at the VA, some rotate at the county hospital, and some come through the university. And typically, I think in an average week, we have about five different internal medicine residents on rotation, and they come for about a month at a time. Once you do your prelim year, as I'm sure all of you can imagine, you're really busy during that year. So when you take a vacation, you don't take it on your ICU block. You have to take it on outpatient blocks. You're not allowed to do it any other time. So although they come through for a month, they're almost always taking vacation during that month too. But we do get to see them quite a bit. And that's really nice for them because, you know, training in medical school in general and dermatology is just woefully underprepares you to be a primary care doctor. So they at least get some exposure that way. And then we really enjoy working with them because they know all this stuff about medicine that most of us as attendings have forgotten or never learned in the first place. And they get to be a lot more independent than they were as a medical student too.
Yeah, that's great and great mention. In many of the communities that don't have access to derms, kind of the PCP becomes the dermatologist or the triage essentially before someone goes to the dermatologist. And so being able to contribute to kind of that education so that they're able to do that well when they go out into practice, or even if they're a hospitalist, being able to know how to better treat some of the lesions or the wounds that present on these patients. And then it sounds like they also get some nice vacation time out of it, and you guys get a benefit from their medical knowledge. So it seems like it's a good month for everyone involved.
Yeah, they get very well-deserved vacation time.
Yes. Yeah. So for you, when you're looking for applicants to join the program as residents, is there anything in particular you feel the department values when it comes to applicants, or maybe in your own personal experience, what makes someone stand out as an applicant?
Yeah. So as I did mention, a lot of people here have medicine trained before, and I'm not one of those people, but a lot of people trained in internal medicine before doing derm. And not if you do a residency and decide to do a second residency, it's not covered by Medicare typically. So not all derm programs can offer that. And since we're one of the ones that do, we tend to concentrate those people here just because we get more applicants like that. So that is one thing that we do value. And it's not, I mean, we don't only take medicine trained people. I don't want to give that impression at all. But that's one thing we do like, because those people have already done medicine training. They've already learned how to become a doctor and decided to actually go back for additional training into dermatology. And that takes a lot of motivation to devote more years of your life. So, you know, you really want to be there when you do that. We in general value people who have done something a little bit more non-traditional when we're looking at applicants. So people who have taken some time to have a job beforehand, or have done a lot of time volunteering, or been involved in leadership areas, those are things that we value really strongly. We're lucky in our specialty that it has a reputation for being super competitive, and that's good and bad. The good thing about it is that the people who do apply in general tend to be really outstanding. So we feel like we can be assured that no matter who we get, they're going to be an outstanding candidate. And so we're interested in these other aspects about them that might make them a better doctor in the long run, or might make our residency program a little bit better in the long run, aside from just their book knowledge. The downside to being really competitive is that a lot of people get scared away to never applying to dermatology in the first place because they don't have 19 publications, which, you know, somewhere says they have to have in order to be successful. I do think that's there's, you know, good and bad things about being competitive as a residency, as a specialty.
Right. And I like what you said, and I feel like kind of in having these conversations with people at different programs, it seems to in a way circle around the same aspect. And like you mentioned, everyone who applies to dermatology is a competitive applicant, and really what separates you from the next person is kind of your own personal interests, what makes you a human and what makes you unique. Because we know most often everyone on paper has good exam scores, has good research. And that takes you so far, but we're all going to be physicians one day interacting with patients. And how we interact with those patients is something that is really valued and can't be taught to a sense. And so having those life experiences, or just you as a person experiences, seems to be something that is highly valued between many programs. And it sounds like yours as well.
Yeah, I agree. And we do talk about this amongst ourselves in our department, as well as at the APD as well, that there's this expectation, I think, that people have had to have gotten really good exam scores and done all sorts of research before they start residency. And we know that the vast majority of those people at any program are not going to end up doing research later. So it's sort of odd that we have a bar for something that is not required for success later on. You're not going to have to take standardized tests for the rest of your life. So performing well on them is sort of a strange bar to set, to have to get into something that's not going to make you keep doing it. Whereas you are going to have to do biopsies and come up with assessments and plans for the rest of your life. So that's what we should be selecting people for, is their ability to do that sort of thing. And they have to communicate with people and be functional in a group. And that's what we should be selecting people for. But that's harder to do.
Yeah, it's harder to standardize for.
Number. Yeah.
But that does make sense. And like you mentioned, it seems like there's it's this weird shift. And so you mentioned when you were in residency, it's kind of this transition period from residents taking a year or two during their program to do some additional research to that not being the norm anymore. But it seems more and more now that the applicants to residency are trying to maybe take an additional year for research or do more research. And so it's kind of this reverse shift to where maybe the field in who it's actually training was shifting a bit away from the research aspect of it. And then the applicants are kind of doing the opposite of that and putting more emphasis on it. And so it's just kind of a unique paradigm, if you will, that I hadn't really realized until now.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's a little bit of a disconnect there. Yeah. Just as I'm sure most people feel that it's sort of strange that one of the most competitive specialties, the hardest one to get into, is the one that has one of the biggest shortages in the country too. Like that, there's a definite disconnect there as well.
Yeah, very true. And yeah. We need more dermatologists, but at the same time, there's not a lack of applicants, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Is there any kind of final messages or advice, comments, encouragement you'd like to leave with those who are listening in today?
All I would like to add is I've been the advisor here for medical students for years. I just passed that on to someone else. But I really encourage that if you're interested in doing dermatology, you should definitely apply, because all those metrics that you see that are intended to scare you off really are just intended to scare you off. And it's super important to always have a backup plan, because it is competitive and great candidates sometimes don't get in. And if you're not the strongest candidate, it might be a bit of an uphill battle. So you always want to have a plan B, but that shouldn't dissuade you from not applying at all. So I really encourage people, if it's something they really enjoy and something that they think they might be happy in, they should give it a shot.
Yeah, I think that resonates with a lot of us. And just a follow-up question I had out of curiosity with that. And you mentioned UW is kind of unique in this aspect and having people who have completed a medicine residency and then decided they want to do additional training. What would you think of someone who knows in their heart they want to do dermatology and as a backup plan says, I will do internal medicine. If I don't match dermatology, complete that residency and then go on to apply dermatology. Is that something you feel like would be recommended? Would you recommend reapplying to dermatology prior to kind of committing to an internal medicine residency? I'm not sure if that's something you could comment on.
Yeah, that's hard. So there is no right answer. Some of it depends on how much of your life you want to commit to this. So doing two residencies is a big chunk of your life and you have a limited number of trips around the sun. So constantly being in preparation is maybe not a great plan instead of pursuing something that you would like. If you decide to do a full medicine residency and apply to derm, there's advantages and disadvantages. You can only apply to a handful of programs because most other programs won't consider you if they can't fund your residency through Medicare. So you have to be very flexible where in the country you're going to end up because you have a very limited pool of places you can apply to. Among those places, you're often going to be highly sought after because they're used to having candidates like you and they're sort of so that's sort of like a predictable mold. There's a predictable mold of something, somebody they might be looking for. And then you also then have the ability to apply outside of the typical cycle because most graduating medical students have to wait a year and a half because they have to do their prelim year first. But if you've already done medicine residency, you already qualify for that. So anytime there's a program that's expanding, they get approval for a new spot and they usually get that approval so that they can fill it that upcoming July. And the only people that can apply for those spots are people who've already done at least a year. So the odds of getting one of those spots are actually not that bad because so few of the overall number of people applying can actually utilize those, but you have to be flexible to go anywhere in the country because you don't know where those spots are going to be the next summer. Mm-hmm. So it's a long route and you come out of it with, you know, being basically double boarded. So you come out being a super physician and you're super qualified to do all sorts of stuff. And maybe you can moonlight while you're a derm resident because you can go to like emergency rooms once one weekend a month or something to make extra money. So there's, you know, there's other things like that that temporarily might be more beneficial. In the long run, though, I think most people that do medicine training and end up doing derm afterwards, most of those probably end up staying in academics because they've really devoted this huge chunk of their life there. That tends to be the people who are drawn to do that. So they do end up running more complicated medical services like inpatient services and such. And that's harder for people without medicine training to do. So if you're really interested in complicated medical dermatology and there's not a med derm program that's combined that appeals to you, you could do it. It's just a longer route. With some downsides to it. So it's not right for everybody.
Yeah. But it's nice to know that, you know, I mean, maybe if you decide halfway through internal medicine residency, you love dermatology, it's not the end of the world for you that people have done that before. And there's a route for that.
Absolutely.
It's a option for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and like you alluded to, we recently had an episode with a resident in the med derm program at Northwestern. And so those are programs that are coming up around the country. So if med derm is something you're really passionate about, know that there are the combined programs available, though there aren't many right now. But that's also something that I think many schools are looking to expand and have kind of in their repertoire of options for residents. So, well, we appreciate you spending some time with us, Dr. Vary, and we are excited about the changes and the opportunities that are ever happening at University of Washington Dermatology. And just want to say thank you again for being here with us.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.